Well, hello everyone again. This is our Raise and Initiations webinar commentary for part two, program number 28. And let's just review just a little bit because we kind of made short work of something that was originally just before we stopped the program, the last program 27. He says, but in this task of unfoldment, of evolution and of a development, the mind of man has to understand, analyze, formulate, and distinguish. And this is necessary before a type of fusion of energies occurs in which a spontaneous response exists without the necessity of all of these specific steps, noting these specific steps. Therefore, the temporary differentiations, and they are temporary, and they will give way to the participation in a non-differentiated state in which all aspects of the Antikarana, the three aspects of it, are united into one. Therefore, the temporary differentiations are of profound and useful importance. We might therefore conclude that the task of the disciple is to become conscious of the following situations, if I may use such a word. Different energies are situated in a certain way with respect to each other. process in combination with force. There is a given process outlined, and the process depends upon the activation of certain forces. A status upon the path, a recognition of the available qualifying energies, agencies or energies, and that's the point that according to one's status on the path, so will be the, so will be the accessibility to certain types of energies. So according to one's status on the path, so will be the accessibility to certain types of energies. And so, as I said before, when we are simply beginning the building of the Antikarana, we may not have accessible to us, as we will later, the Buddhic energy, the Atmic energy, and the Monadic energy. Our first work is with the energies of the abstract mind. Fusion, or integration of the consciousness thread and the creative thread, and with the life thread. So this is a triple integration, which reveals the completed Antikarana eventually. Okay. All right. And then creative activity. And this is, in a way, the last result, the correct use of the Antikarana. This is essential, for it is not only through the development of creative ability in the three worlds that the necessary focal point is created, but this also leads to the building of the Antikarana, its creation. So the Antikarana is a creation, and we are assisted from above, but working from below. Okay, to construct the Antikarana between the spiritual triad and the personality, with the cooperation of the soul, these three points of divine energy might be symbolized thus. And since I cannot copy this type of diagram, for some reason, I have to simply rely upon it, the threefold monad, the threefold egoic lotus, the Antikarana completed between the monastic permanent atom and the mental unit, however, not quite completed all the way to the monad and via the Buddhic permanent atom and also the Atmic permanent atom. Okay. So to construct the Antikarana between the spiritual triad and the personality, with the cooperation of the soul and, let's just say, this means the cooperation of the angel of the presence angel of the presence within the egoic lotus. So these three points of divine energy might be symbolized thus, and we have seen the symbol. In this simple symbol, you have a picture of the disciples' task upon the path. It is a task of integration, of integrating aspects of his nature, which are thus far unrelated in consciousness. And another diagram may serve to clarify, and here we have the nine of initiation, or the transmuting of the nine forces into divine energies. So let's go back one, the nine of initiation, here we have the threefold monad, eventually connected via the antikarana to the soul and to the personality. There are three forces to be transmuted in the personality, three within the soul. And maybe we can say that these three within the soul are really the three of the spirit of the spiritual triad, and eventually the three within the monad itself. It doesn't show the spiritual triad, but the true ego, we are told, is the spiritual triad. So the soul, or causal body, expressing itself through the abstract mind, the son of mind, and the concrete mind. Okay, so we see the antikarana. It seems to be going through the soul or causal body, and in one respect it does do that, as we see from particular diagram, that the antikarana in a sense does go through the egoic lotus and continue on its path. The first diagram showed the antikarana, in a sense, bypassing the soul. And the second diagram shows it going through the soul. Here is the bypassing of the egoic lotus, or what we often call the soul. And here we see it passing through the egoic lotus, or the soul. In this case, the spiritual triad is not represented. Really, with the expression of the monad as the spiritual triad and the threefold nature of the monad, we actually have a six on that high level. Add to it the three of the soul and the three of the personality, you get a summation in 12. Okay, that's a little bit of a review. The nine of initiation has to do certainly with the three aspects of the monad expressed in the spiritual triad and expressed in the soul, and the three aspects of the soul and the three aspects of the personality. So there are different ways to count these things, but the summation is nine, and they will be, all the lower forces will be transmuted into divine energies. We can say that the energies of the spiritual triad are with respect to the monad actually expressed as forces, and they have to be lifted up. The monadic aspects are those, I think, which are involved in the higher initiations 7, 8, and 9. Okay, I think that, you know, there's much more to be thought about there, and not that everything that could or should be said has been said, but it gives us at least a sense of how our apparatus is involved in a ninefold transmutation, which eventually completes the initiatory process with respect to the cosmic physical plane. Let us for a moment, therefore, we're going on now, consider just where the aspirant stands when he starts consciously to build the antikarana. We do remember that there has been much unconscious building. The whole idea of building the antikarana meets with little recognition, because this sensitive reaching out into the environing circumstances has gone on in an unconscious manner. Behind him lie a long series of existences, externalizations in the three lower worlds. Let us call these existences three lower worlds. Okay, externalizations, there we are. Okay, the experience of which has brought him to the point where he is able consciously to assess his condition and arrive at some understanding of his point of evolution. And let's just say this is this type of assessment is missing for the majority of human beings. So this long series of lives or of existences has brought him to the point, reasonable spiritual maturity, where he is able to assess his condition and arrive at some understanding of his point in evolution. He can consequently undertake, in cooperation with his steadily awakening and focusing consciousness, basically the soul within the form, to take the next step, which is that of accepted discipleship. To take the next step, which is that of accepted discipleship. And it seems that some building of the Antikarana is necessary to enter stage of, that's the accepting discipleship, okay. Accepted discipleship. Well, I'll just spell it out. I know it exists. Okay. In the present, he is oriented towards the soul. He, through meditation and the mystical experience, the experience of the of an inner kind relating to a dimension which is not found usually in personality perception, he, through meditation and the mystical experience, does have occasional contact with the soul. And this happens with increasing frequency. So DK is describing, you know, DK is describing the condition of those who are preparing to consciously build the Antikarana. He is becoming somewhat creative upon the physical plane, both in his thinking and in his actions. It still may be a kind of a personal creativity, of course. That is. So he, some creativity upon the physical plane, and both in his thinking and his actions, and this is an important point, at times, even if rarely, he has a genuine intuitive experience. What we do see in these early stages, we do see the intermittency of of higher contacts, and the fact that they do not occur at will. This intuitive experience serves to anchor the first tenuous thread spun by the weaver in Fohatic enterprise. So it's interesting that, as the old commentary puts it, these touches of the intuition leave their mark and are the beginning of a channel between that dimension, the intuition, and the consciousness of the physical brain in the personality. It is the first cable projected from the spiritual triad. Notice that we have projection is going in two directions simultaneously. So when we project in a certain stage of the conscious antichrona building, we can expect a kind of projected response. And in fact, the first projection seems to come from the spiritual triad and not from the man consciously working at this building. It is the first cable projected from the spiritual triad, okay, in response to the emanation of the personality. So, and let's just say, this is not yet conscious, conscious building. Whoop, CNS, building. But is the result of the growing magnetic potency of both of these aspects of the monad in manifestation, spiritual triad and the increasingly soul-infused personality, simply by their own magnetism, simply as a result of their own magnetism, this type of interplay begins to occur intermittently. Okay. It will be obvious to you that when the personality is becoming adequately magnetized from the spiritual angle, i.e., you know, it becomes spiritually magnetic, its note or sound will go forth. And I would say it becomes spiritually magnetic through aspiration. Its note or sound will go forth and will evoke response from the soul on its own plane. So we draw to ourselves that which can elevate our nature if we are aspiring. We also draw to ourselves other factors which can degrade us if the quality of our desires is related to lower things. Later, the personality note and the soul note in unison will produce a definitely attractive effect upon the spiritual triad. This is really, DK has given so much here of the process. Before even the conscious work of building the antichrona begins, so we see we have to be somewhat qualified by these preliminary happenings or processes before we can really begin with any hope of success later. And that would be the place where we who try consciously to build the antichrona hope that we find ourselves. Later, the personality note and the soul note in unison will produce a definitely attractive force upon the spiritual triad. And note that in the process of conscious building, we use two colors, that of the personality and that of the soul. And these colors are sounding. So we are replicating consciously that which occurs before that point, unconsciously. Okay, so later the personality note and the soul note in unison, will produce a definitely attractive effect upon the spiritual triad. It will draw the attention of the triad. Okay. It will call forth the attention of the spiritual triad. This spiritual triad, in its turn, has been exerting an increasingly magnetic effect upon the personality. So we have a process of mutual attraction, mutual magnetism. This begins at the time of the first conscious soul contact. And so that's very interesting that the triad becomes involved, even at the early stage of the first conscious soul contact, the first recognition that there is a soul, and that it is a part of our energy system. The response of the triad is transmitted necessarily in this early stages via the Sutratma, and produces, so it's not a conscious response, or it's not a consciously registered response, and produces inevitably the awakening of the head center, the Sutra Atma, or life thread, pass through the head center. And this is why the heart doctrine begins to supersede the doctrine of the eye. The heart doctrine governs occult development. The eye doctrine, which is the doctrine of the eye of vision, governs the mystical experience. And there is a discrimination here between the two, between cult development and mystical development. I'm remembering now that for the mystic, there is a great stimulation above the head, but it does not penetrate to the center of the head and truly awaken the pineal gland. So anyway, the response of the triad is transmitted necessarily in its early stages via the Sutratma, not via the Antikarana, which has not been built, and produces inevitably the awakening of the head center. And so this is, at first, a mystical awakening. Okay, that is why the heart doctrine begins to supersede the doctrine of the eye. It's interesting, the heart, I think what we have here is the heart conduces to unity and identification. And the mystical vision is still dualistic. The heart doctrine governs occult development, and the eye doctrine, which is the doctrine of the eye vision, governs the mystical experience. And some of us may remember, if we've passed through the arcane school, that there is a later set of studies which deal with the doctrine of the eye and the doctrine of the heart. The heart doctrine, based upon the universal nature of the soul, conditioned by the monad, the one, is conditioned by the monad, the one, and involves reality. The I doctrine is based upon the dual relation between the soul and personality. This is such a clear definition, and it makes me begin to understand, I've been working on in my own way, I guess, the factor of identification. And when I feel that identification, that sameness, that realization of the identical beingness of any two factors, I feel it in the heart. Of course, it's not only the heart center, because it has to do with the heart and the soul are equivalent. And all of this is really really impulsed by the monad. Now, interestingly, the monad is found on that part of the cosmic physical plane, which we would call the second cosmic ether, which is analogous to the systemic position of the heart chakra in the man, in the second systemic ether. So the monad has a heart connection and is also conditioned by the number 12. And, the 12th sign, Pisces, and I leave the father's home, the second subplane, cosmic subplane, and turning back, I save. So the heart doctrine is based upon the universal nature of the soul, Aquarius, the sign of universality and of the inclusion of the many factors. Aquarius, the sign of universality and the inclusion of all the many, of all the many. Maybe I should just leave it that way. Conditioned by the monad, the one. It's that source by identification with which we realize the one. It involves reality, and we have to say here that reality is non-dual. A dual duality is a seeming, a temporary seeming. The I doctrine is based upon the dual relation between the soul and personality, and this is the realization of this relation has to do with a mystical apprehension. It involves the spiritual relationships, yes, but the attitude of dualism or of the recognition of the polar opposites is implicit in it. The mystic longs for God and frequently experiences that which he thinks of as not God. The occultist, in identification, knows that all is, well, I'll capitalize it, all is God. These are important points to remember as this new science becomes more widely known. Well, you can just see how much pondering is required. I'm going through these things somewhat in depth, but not in sufficient depth. Everybody has to do that himself or herself. Okay, so there is attraction going on between the spiritual triad, first between the soul and the personality, then between the spiritual triad and the combined soul and personality infused to a certain degree. There's an interactive magnetism. I will say this, that with all this interactive magnetism, the sign Gemini is involved. And I would suppose its esoteric ruler Venus and to a degree Mercury. So this spiritual triad, well, even at the first spiritual triad contact or magnetic effect begins at the time of the first soul contact. Just as at the first initiation, there is a kind of monadic presence established within the soul nature, and that is not registered by the physical brain. The response of the triad is transmitted necessarily in the early stages via the sutratma, meaning not a consciously registered response. It is an energy response rather than a consciousness response, and produces inevitably the awakening of the head center, which is awakened but not further progressed in the mystic. And that is why, eventually, from this mystical, let's just say, interestingly enough, from this perspective, the mystic is involved with the head and the occultist with the heart. And now that's not always the way it reads out, because occultism has its foundation within the head, or perhaps within the heart within the head. But from this perspective, mysticism is related to the head, and occultism to the heart. And we might think about it in just the opposite way without looking more deeply into the matter. The heart doctrine governs occult development. The eye doctrine, the eye is centered within the head, is the doctrine of the eye of vision, which immediately means that this sees that, and so a duality is established, and it governs the mystical experience. The heart doctrine is based upon the universal nature of the soul, the pervasion, let's just say, upon all pervading consciousness, conditioned by the monad, the one, and involves reality. Reality is non-dual. The I doctrine is based upon the dual relation between the soul and personality. It involves the spiritual relationships, yes, because we can say the soul-personality relationship is a spiritual relationship. But the attitude of dualism, or of the recognition of the polar opposites, is implicit within it. And this is the kind of understanding in which the mystic is involved. There is the longing for that which is divine, and the attribution of the ordinary environment as not divine. The attribute of sort of not divine, of non-divinity, is attributed to the ordinary environment. So the mystic is torn between God and not God, between divine and not divine, between transcendent and ordinary. The occultist is not. The occultist recognizes, in the words of my old teacher, this is it. And as I've thought further about it, you know, the fullness of God is ever present in all things, which are, I mean, God, the ultimate, is indivisible. So we cannot say a part of God in any meaningful way. The boundless, immutable principle is indivisible. It has no number. So all that we see is paradoxically God in its fullness. And each and every item that we appear to discriminate is the indivisible fullness of the Absolute, though naturally veiled by means of illusion, or Maya. These are important points to remember as this new science becomes more widely known. The aspirant eventually arrives at the point where the three threads of life, of consciousness, and of creativity are being focused, recognized as energy streams, and used deliberately by the aspiring disciple upon the lower mental plane. Okay, I just want to make sure that I'm... Okay. So this is the aspirant to initiation. They are being focused, vitality, sensitivity, and the ability to arrange or create in meaningful combinations. They are being focused, recognized as energy streams, and utilized deliberately because mind is, in a sense, will, by the aspiring disciple upon the lower mental plane. And this is this is the point of focus from which these streams are directed. There, esoterically speaking, he takes a stand, and looking upward sees a promised land of beauty, love, and future vision. Okay, so the true aspirant has the mental focus. But, and this is explaining the situation which has to be overcome by the Antikorama, but there exists a gap in consciousness, though not in fact, let's just say, not in energetic fact. So while there is something, so to speak, up there, it is not registered. It does not come through and participate in his normal consciousness. The sutratmic strand of the energy bridges the gap and tenuously relates the monad, soul, and personality, all of which are, in a way, vitalized from the monad. So, and this is important, you know, sometimes we look at this gap and we think it is absolute, but there is an energy strand bridging the gap, but it is the strand of life energy and not of consciousness. But the consciousness thread extends only from soul to personality, from the involutionary sense. That which the soul is establishes itself under confined conditions within the personality. Okay. From the evolutionary angle, using a, in other words, this is the soul reaching down, but there is also that sentient reaching out into the environing whole, which is the consciousness thread. Man is becoming conscious from his own perspective ever more. From the evolutionary angle, using a paradoxical phrase, there is only a very little conscious awareness between the soul and the personality, from the standpoint of the personality upon the evolutionary arc of the path of return. We might say the soul knows, let's see, okay, knows the personality, but the personality does not yet know the soul. So, you know, how much do we, in our normal personality consciousness, really realize about life on the soul plane, or for that matter, life upon the astral or mental planes? Some of the recognition of what life on the astral plane is like has been deliberately shut out so that we can focus more mentally. It's not possible to do all things at the same time until a later point of synthesis is reached. From the evolutionary angle, using a paradoxical phrase, and this is, you know, evolutionary angle, we can say from the, whoops, from, I don't know why that is not working, from the periphery to the center, there is only a very little conscious awareness existing between the soul and personality, from the standpoint of the personality upon the evolutionary arc of the path of return. A man's whole effort is to become aware of the soul, increasingly done through meditation and contemplation. I see, done through meditation and contemplation, and to transmute his consciousness into that of the soul while still preserving the consciousness of the personality. And this is so important. It's not to go off on some world-denying transport, not to deny the world, but to retain personality consciousness while entering ever more fully consciousness of the soul. So it's a an additive process. So a man's whole effort from the evolutionary perspective is to become aware of the soul and to transmute his consciousness into that of the soul. And we can say and this consciousness already exists and is awaiting the penetration of the personality consciousness into itself, while still preserving the consciousness of the personality. And if we look at, we think about the masters, of course, they can do this. They can simultaneously be aware on many different levels, and this awareness for the high soul, for the high initiate, simultaneous awareness does not compromise any of the strata of which the initiate is aware. So it's not like that because we are soul conscious, we are less conscious of the three worlds, although I suppose we can deliberately shut them out if we wish, or because we may be monadically conscious, such as the Buddha and the Christ are, that we are somehow less aware of that which is transpiring here. We are not less aware of anything. We are more aware because we see what is transpiring here in the immediacy as part of a larger environment. As the fusion of soul and personality is strengthened, the creative thread becomes increasingly active, and thus the three threads steadily fuse, blend, become dominant, and the aspirant is then ready to bridge the gap and unite the spiritual triad and the personality through the medium of the soul, or we might say, in one way, if we bypass the soul, through the medium of the absorbed soul. So as the fusion of soul and personality is strengthened, remember, the creative thread becomes increasingly active. We remember that there were five threads, the extension of which was carried to the throat center. And I suppose from the throat center, the creative thread is nurtured and used. After all, the personality is the intelligence aspect. And the fusion of soul with the personality renders it not only more loving, but more intelligent. So, and thus the three threads, life, consciousness, and creativity, steadily fuse and operate, operate simultaneously, fuse and blend, operate simultaneously, become dominant, and the aspirant is then ready to bridge the gap and unite the spiritual triad and the personality through the medium of the soul. And, you know, the Antikorana is not exactly launched from the higher mental plane, it's launched from the lower mental plane, but there has been the absorption of soul quality and the ability of the mind to be held steadily in the light. So this involves a different effort at divine creative work. And this, you know, he's taking us to the point where the discussion of how to build the Antikorana in the way that he has explained throughout this book can be undertaken. Okay. I'm hoping there could be little echoes here in this headphone. First of all, I hope they don't exist, and second, if they exist, I hope they are not terribly disturbing. The clue to understanding lies perhaps in the thought that hitherto the relation between soul and personality has been steadily carried forward, primarily by the soul, as it stimulated the personality to effort, vision, and expansion. So we have to say, note the power of stimulation from above. Often we may think it is our personality effort that is accomplishing spiritual progress, but we are being evoked by the invocation of the soul. When I say we, I mean we, the personality, are being evoked by the invocation of the soul. Now, at this stage, the integrated, rapidly developing personality becomes consciously active, and this means creative, and in unison with the soul, which has infused the personality to a significant extent, starts to build the Antikorana, a fusion of the three threads and a projection of them into the higher, wider reaches of the mental plane until the abstract mind and the lower concrete mind are related by a triple cable. And so let us remember the triple nature of that which is projected. So now at this stage, a stage of readiness, the integrated, rapidly developing personality becomes consciously active. It has been sufficiently evoked. This integrating personality has been sufficiently evoked by the soul working from above. And in unison with the soul, starts to build the antikarana, because it is the soul-infused personality which builds the antikarana, and not just the personality per se. Begins to build the antikarana, a fusion of the three threads, and a projection into the higher, wider reaches of the mental plane to the abstract mind and the lower concrete mind are related by a triple cable. Now, interestingly, we use two colors in this evocation, this projection, and not three. It is to this process that our studies are related. Earlier experience in relation to the three threads is logically regarded as having occurred normally and unconsciously. The man now stands holding the mind steady in the light. He has some knowledge of meditation, much devotion, and also recognition of the next step. So, let's just say, this is where the average aspirant to building the antikarana stands. Knowledge of process gradually becomes clearer. It does take some time. DK lays it out very sequentially, but it does take time to assimilate. Knowledge of process gradually becomes clearer. A growing soul contact is established. Occasional flashes of intuitive perception from the triad occur. So all this accompanies the process. All these recognitions are not present in the case of every disciple. All, you know, it depends on what type of disciple, what type of ray, you know. In the fusion formulas, we see that the first ray type receives illumination, the second ray type imagination, the third ray type power. So different soul types may receive different revelations in this antikaronic process. All these recognitions are not present in the case of every disciple. Some are present, some are not. I'm seeking to give a general picture. Individual application and future realization have to be worked out by the disciple in the crucible experience. So, you know, if we follow the instructions and do, we shall know. If we follow instructions given and do, then we shall know. So the preliminary work has been done, and we are now ready for those phases we've come to think of as intention, visualization, projection, invocation and evocation, stabilization, and, well, maybe I'm forgetting one, but we'll get to that. Oh, resurrection, yes. Forgetting that one. Okay. So as soul and personality, okay, so we've recognized there exists a gap in consciousness. The sutratmic strand of energy bridges the gap. The consciousness thread really extends only from the soul to personality, from the evolutionary sense. The soul knows the personality much more thoroughly than as yet the personality can know the soul. From the evolutionary angle, using a paradoxical phrase, there's only very little conscious awareness existing between the soul and personality from the standpoint of the personality upon the evolutionary arc. And that's where we are, trying to know that higher realm. A man's whole effort is to become aware of the soul at first, and to transmute his consciousness into that of the soul, or to create such changes in his mechanism that the consciousness of the soul can easily penetrate and he can penetrate into it. I suppose it's mutual, while still preserving the consciousness of the personality in the lower three worlds. And as the fusion of soul and personality is strengthened, the creative thread becomes ever active. The man can be an intelligent creator in the world, either according to selfish purposes or, you know, in this case, hopefully for higher purposes related to the plan. And thus the three threads, he's living, he's conscious, and he's creative, steadily fuse and blend, become dominant, and the aspirant is then ready to bridge the gap and unite the spiritual triad through the medium of the soul. Now, this, of course, is interesting because sometimes we've had the image that the antikarana extends through the soul, as in this particular image. But the other image shows something quite different, and I've shown how, in a sense, both are true because the antikarana is triangular in nature. There is an aspect of it which does bypass what we normally call the soul, but there is an aspect which passes through what we normally call the soul, and this I demonstrated here, this particular antikaronic triangle. The one we're concerned with building, of course, though, is the direct path. And he gives us that particular method. There is the other method as well, and I'm sure many have used it over the many millennia as thinkers have struggled to find their way into the higher worlds through deep, deep concentration and thought, pondering, contemplation, and so forth. The clue to understanding lies in the thought that hitherto the relation between soul and personality has been steadily carried forward primarily by the soul. Interesting, you know, we think so often that we are responsible for creating a new spiritual condition within the consciousness, but we have constantly been invoked by the soul, and if we at last become the spiritualized personality, it is, in a sense, the victory of the soul, soul or angel, which has made this possible, or at least the victory is to be attributed to the higher point, the soul, soul or angel. Primarily by the soul, is it stimulated the personality to effort, vision, and expansion. DK talks in Treatise on White Magic as the waves of inspiration that come from the soul, and how through meditation, regular meditation, we are to become aware of these higher impulses of idealism and possibility that come into our consciousness, incentives, spiritual incentives arising from the soul, or at least when these streams of energy touch us, it creates for us an incentive. So now, at this stage, the integrated, rapidly developing personality becomes consciously active, and in union with the soul, which has been infusing, starts to build the antikarana. A fusion of the three threads and a projection of them into the higher, wider reaches of the mental planes, you know, especially the first subplane, which would have the highest and the widest reaches of any dimension on the mental plane, a fusion of the three threads and a projection of them into the higher wider reach of the mental plane until the abstract mind and the lower concrete mind are related by a triple cable. And so the influence of this cable will be a sense of greater livingness, greater consciousness, and greater can-do, you know, creativity in the life of the soul awakening personality. So we will be altogether more empowered at this point by the completion of this first strand, the first triple cable. It is to this process, I guess I'm doing a review here, right? It is to this process that our studies are related. Earlier experience in relation to the three threads is logically regarded as having occurred normally and unconsciously in the one who would consciously build. The man now stands holding the mind steady in the light. This he's learned through meditation, that Virgo phase. He has some knowledge of meditation. It doesn't have to be complete by any means. Much devotion, because he has been an aspirant and is still very much an aspiring disciple. And also the recognition of the next step. And this is, of course, conscious recognition. Knowledge of process gradually becomes clearer because we are instructed by such teachers as DK concerning what the process is. A growing soul contact is established and fortifies the whole process. Fortifies the whole process. Occasional flashes of intuitive perception from the triad occur. So this is a preliminary stage. Those intuitive impressions are not systematically, with regularity, invoked. All these recognitions are not present in the case of every disciple. Some are present, some are not. I'm seeking to give a general picture, individual application, and future realization have to be worked out by the disciple in the crucible of experience. So he's opening for us a line of work and instructing us very carefully as to how to proceed, but telling us that he can't tell us all that we will encounter. Realization will occur as we apply what is given. And the secrets of the higher worlds come to us. They are, in a way, the secrets of initiation. They are not to be conveyed to others, because others have to work their way into such realizations. And DK at times tells us that even if we wanted to convey some of these things, we would not be able to do that. We would not have the language to do it. Maybe there would not be the readiness to receive on the other side. Of course, we attempt to convey something. But the entirety of what is experienced, this type of realization, cannot be conveyed by verbal means from one to another, though it can arouse, let's say, an intuition from the other. Well, let's say then that this is the end of Rays and Initiation Women or Commentary program number 28. And, well, whatever page we're on here. Tell me the page is not... we're on page 459, so we've just done a little bit here. Pages 456 to 459, and beginning of Ray's Initiation Webinar Commentary, Program 29, pages 459 to something. So, Yes, this will do. I'm continually impressed by the depth of what he's trying to convey and how it really has to be worked out by us in our own meditative life. These energy changes have to occur within us, and then we will know something. When we're told something, we know something about it in terms of what we have known before, but it's not really the new realization. It just leads us to the possibility of intelligently undertaking the process which will lead to a true new realization. Okay, we will go on shortly to program number 29. See you then.